Yeah, I'm just going to focus on the department itself. I think the folly of splitting the former Department of Communications into is clearly evident in the track record that's here. I mean, it's dismal. I mean, it was never a great performing department, and it just seems to be going backwards now, which I find is quite sad. But I'd also like to know, I'm not going to go through item by item, because it's just a litany of unachievement. But basically, I just want to know the current fractious nature of the department, where we're having fisticuffs in the corridors and disciplinary hearings going on. I mean, what is this? Is this part of the disruptive environment that's going on at the moment? How healthy is this? Has a DG been fired by SMS? And are there other inquiries going on? Please can you, Minister, I think we actually do need clarity on this, because this is a critical department. I mean, major infrastructure projects that are underway haven't even been touched. I mean, you know, broadband, SA Connect, it's just not there. It's not apparent. And these, you know, we seem to have managed to get to a couple of events and a couple of overseas trips and presentations there, but the actual core activities of the department have fallen by the wayside. And that's been over a period of, what, 6 months? If we're looking at this as the quarter to the end of December. You know, this is shocking. We're behind in the ICT rankings worldwide anyway, and this is all thanks to some strange whim of the President to separate the departments. Can you please elaborate on that, and on the departmental ructions that are going on at the moment? Thank you.
Just carry to honourable member, you spoke about SMSs, DGs.
The Director General, Deputy Director General of International Relations, apparently was fired by SMS. We found out about that when he was on leave and came back to find he was locked out of his office, resulting in 50 cuffs, I think, last Thursday night in the department.
I think Member Sheen has covered some of the concerns regarding the department. From the presentation, there's too many delays, although reasons are given to that effect, but it's really not something to write home about. I would like to know so far how many resignations have taken place in the department, and is there an exit strategy to discourage people from leaving the department? And what is the common reason for them to leave if we had that sub turnover? And the other one on CETA, the presenter referred to other methods to enforce collection from departments. Can you share with us that other method that you have as a plan? And on poor planning, you have alluded to what extent has it impacted on finances, the financial implication of this poor planning? And also, please to know that you're in the process of appointing the CFO, but you have to know the time frame, as it's a very significant position in the department or in other organizations. And on Dr. Zetna, I'm not okay. I'm trying my best, yeah. We always ask a common question when it comes to training as to we need a breakdown in terms of gender and race and also the geographic location, so that when you do oversight, we know exactly where to do oversight. I'll stop there for now. I'll come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is only two for Ines. In the previous financial, Ines received its allocation from the department. What is the status of allocating funds to INES? Has been any improvement? Secondly, there's an appointment of CEO. It's 2 years, it's 2 financial years, not yet been appointed. Can you please verify, is that the INES wants some person or the department wants other person? What's the problem? because it's two financial years. Thank you.
Honorable Mafulo. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentations that we have received. I have a question. My first question is, does all senior managers have signed a performance agreement? Are they the DGGs who are here familiar with what has been presented to them to us today? And then I want to ask the chairperson of audit committee in the department, is he happy about the performance of the department? And then I saw on something the DG reported to us that he wrote a letter to ICASA. There is a delay of them. Is there any follow-up? What is the relationship between you and ICASA, with the department and ICASA, for taking so long? And then other entities have reported that there are delays of funds. How are those things going to be resolved? Thank you.
Thanks, members. I think from my side to all chairpersons of audit committees, while sitting listening to this presentation, and that's why some of the presentations, I'm going to be specific when I come to the details. Some of this presentation, they differ to the presentations that we received. We remember the department together with entities are required to come and present their plans, which will be happening now in April. So when you take what has been presented in terms of the plan, DG, versus what is being reported, there's gaps. One example is the department. One of the targets that is not even reflected by the department, the issue of the SMME, is there in the plan. And I agree with Honorable Shin, what is being reported is not what in the core of the deliverables by the department. These are activities. You look at the first two slides, it's activities that the department has engaged on, not the core in terms of the activities based on the annual plans. Hence, I made those comments to say, you've got to look at what have you said to the committee, this is what we are going to do. It's simple. I didn't even have to go to the annual plans, just the presentations that you have done to the committee, and quickly open them sitting here. Because those are the gaps that you are able to pick up. But again, that's what I'm saying to the chairpersons of the audit committees, because when you sign off, for example, in PBI, the chairperson of the audit committee signs off to say that there's capacity in the entity we are able to do, but presenting here, she says something else. That it contradicts what is written in the annual report, what she has signed off in the annual report. So for me, it's very problematic that I'm not so sure if colleagues take time to sit and prepare coming to the committee. And that's why I made those remarks when I opened the meeting to say, you've got to understand the consequences of why you are here and what you are here to do. Because we have an obligation to be oversight. And our oversight can only be effective based on the nature of the information that you give us. So if you give us something else and then we say come back, then there's contradictions. What do you expect us to do? Because you're literally limiting our ability to be able to do work. And the other issue is that we sit with the Auditor General's office, and this comes minister to the SOE unit. I raise it every time. But I'm not so sure if the SOE unit's responsibility in the department is just to get a report, pass them over and submit to Treasury. And I think, members, what we need to do, one of the things maybe in the next term that we must prioritize is get a meeting with the Treasury. Because if you are to look at some of these things, for example, the department says to us that they're sitting on 99% of their vacancy rate. Auditor General says 10.4%. And And did you, you say to us that your report, first the report that was there disputed by DDGs, and then later, that for me is a symptom of lack of coordination, no management team, which the Auditor General raises with us as well. Because you can't come to a committee, DG, and say to us that you had, those issues are your internal issues. Must stop at the department. You must take responsibility and accountability. It's your problem. Here we are not looking for problems, we are looking for solutions. We want to hear how are you leading the department. If there are issues that are disputed and there are issues, that's for you to manage. I think you can report to the minister. For us here, we want the end result to say, this are the issues, this is what performance is. But what we need is performance. So still where I'm sitting, I'm still disputing what you have presented to us. I'm not confident that is the true reflection. There are various areas that I can point to from the report of the Auditor General, from the presentation that you have done when you presented the APP. And what is coming as annual, as you have got. It was not mistake, colleagues, that we asked you to come here for quarter three. You are going to come for your fourth quarter towards the end of the year. We wanted to have this sense when we go to into the budget process. But also for people to understand that when you table annual reports and when you table performance plans, it has to be something that you have processed. It has to be, it can be that it must look like it's a rushed job. Because we're talking about government money here. We're talking about the responsibilities that we have. To you, sir, I'm not sure what happened to the rapid deployment. I couldn't pick that up of the telecenters programs. So I'm one sitting colleagues, I'm not happy, I must say, as the chair of the committee, what is coming through. It's just putting one in a very, very, very difficult position. And I made those comments, colleagues, earlier on, precisely because I understand the role and the work that you do as a committee of parliament. I would hate the situation where I'm pushed to a corner where we have to take a hearing because somebody has misled parliament. It's not a nice thing. I wouldn't want to do that during the time I'm chair. But you've got to help us with the information that you give us. I'm just worried about the unit SOE in the department, really, because we can't be picking these things up. Surely when the quarterly reports are submitted, analysis should be done, even prior to coming to the committee, when we have called this type of a meeting. You expect that these are the issues that would have flagged already, to say, we have picked up this, we have picked up this, even corrected prior to coming here. The reason I'm saying we're going to have to call Treasury because we need to verify the information on finances. There's an issue around fiscal dumping. There's an issue of misappropriation. Because if we've got to look at the targets that have been met versus the budget, you can't meet 38% of a target with 70% of a budget, then there's something wrong. Then Treasury must tell us where the money is. Because we have no capacity to audit each line. So performance is based on when performance has to link with what is being given. Because if there are gaps in terms of what is being given, then we have an issue. That's why, colleagues, I always say to us, let's rather be honest where we have weaknesses, then we can assist each other. But for me, it becomes very difficult and uncomfortable if I have a sense of, I don't want to use an extreme word, but sort of cover up of matters. Because that you are able to sense it, you are able to pick it up on the reports and the presentation as they come. Because you can't say something else or you write something else on your annual reports and performances and then something else happens. And my concern is that these are some of the issues that we raised with you during the annual performance in October. I'm not so sure if in each entity and the department you have a mechanism where you are sitting and looking at the issues that we have raised. Because the BRRR process, we've raised quite a number of issues that we are finding ourselves raising here again. I mean, if the audit team of the department, Minister says that the issues of performance, and last year we have raised the issue even of signing performance agreements in time, how do you hold people accountable when performance agreements are not signed on time? Which are recurring error. And I accept you've said that there are certain issues that have not been resolved, Minister. But those are the things that where we must start so that we can get the bigger things in. Because there's no way you'd be able to get performance of the department in terms of the processes, if this thing of performance agreements are not signed in time. National Treasury's requirements is that in each quarter, 25% must be spent. So you see the trends of under expenditure that are clearing already. And that's why I related to the issue of fiscal dumping. Either going to see at the end of the year, we'll be looking at that to see where the money is and all that. And again to the chairpersons of the audit teams, audit committees. When we met with the post office, and I'm going to use post office as an example because all of us know the situation in post office, and we did an analysis. We have not called them here today because they have their separate process and we've engaged with them separately. Part of what we had picked up, and we were asking ourselves as members of parliament to say, where was the board when post office reached the state it reached? Because the board would have to have a subcommittee or a committee that deals with risk and audit that picks it up on the issues and therefore clear them. And the chair of the risk and audit in the department, the issue of the loan that is not disclosed by the Department of Post Office is an issue. I know the Auditor General has raised it with the department. There's a loan by Post Office that they are not paying currently. It has been incurring interest. And in terms of PFMA, the department is required to declare that loan is not being declared on the financial statements of the department. Then it will be a miracle if I know about it and the department and they do not know about it. But I'm just saying, that's why I'm flagging the issue. All this is the things that SOE unit needs to be picking up, that needs to flag all these weaknesses. If the board is not meeting, or the board meets, you have a board that meets four times a year, but the entity collapses in its hands. And Minister, you were not here. We all actually even started to say we need to regularize, have a regulation on how many board meetings must be there, because it's a concern. If a board meets four times in a month, it means every week a board is meeting, and these are ordinary board meetings. Then you come to subcommittees. When is the executive doing work? And when we met at that time, I'm not so sure if the colleagues who were there on behalf of the department reported. Because that's why we said maybe minister needs to look, we recommended as the committee to say maybe minister needs to look at just regularizing the number of board meetings that the boards must have. So that there is time for the executive to do work. You can't have executive forever that is sitting in board meetings. If you have board meetings every week, then you have subcommittees, meaning 2 days they could literally spend in board activities. Then they are left with 3 days. If they have bad luck that week, they are called by the committee. Now it's 3 days gone. They are left with 2 days. Maybe there's a meeting with the minister. Then they are left with 1 day. So we've got to try and balance in terms of work that we do. To be able to, when we say we call for accountability and request for work that's been done, it's done. I'm just raising these things, colleagues, because it's really worrying. We do not want to see ourselves as a situation where we reach where we are. That's why I also flagged on BVI a number of the audit issues. That's why I had an issue, chairperson of the committee, Member Point, Ms. Mapoint. I had an issue because when you look at your Auditor General's findings, all of them relate to finance issues, SEM, finance and all that. But the signed statement by yourself on the audit and annual report contradicts what is here. Because your major statement says to us that the stability, the finance has capacity, and the team understand what they are doing. But major of the issues are sitting there. You look at those issues that are being raised there by the Auditor General. It's matters that falls within the side. And you ask yourself, okay, if we have the people with the right skills, capacitated and understand what they are doing, why do we have all these things? That's why we've asked, because we want to start holding the audit committee chairs accountable, so that when you write and sign a statement, you understand what you are doing. Because you are not assisting the department or you are not assisting the entity by not declaring the actual situation. Because if you say to us everything is well, remember we read your statement and we look at it, we say, okay, the audit committee says everything is well, let's look at what the Auditor General says, we find something else, because you are expected to be independent from the executive and therefore give an objective view of what is happening in the department, in the entities and the department. So I'm really, really concerned, and the engagement is a start, but we want to emphasize more accountability in the work and more stringent in how we do work. It can be business as usual in terms of our targets. That's what I'm saying. Reflect on the targets. You've said this is what you are going to do. And therefore, based on that, in terms of the court, because if we're sitting with a number of things that are not yet achieved and things that are still pending to be resolved, then we'll not see the improvement that we're looking for. In terms of the work, So when we do the budget process, I have indicated that we want to have more time. We'll probably have one entity per morning and one in the afternoon so that we have more time to engage. I think it's the same approach that we must take with the APPs, so that we have a clear leveling of issues that we are able to. But I really hope that colleagues, when you go back as well, one of the issues is to sit down on the table and look at what we raise, what the Auditor General raise, and start dealing with it objectively. So
those are the issues that I just wanted to raise for now, and then we are going to maybe just allow the responses and then come back to you. So you want to start? There was something related.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think let me thank the interaction, particularly the comments from the committee, maybe also just as a way of encouraging others. Let me also congratulate those entities which continue to have clean audit or try to have clean audit. I think that's important. Unfortunately, there are few than those who are not at that level yet. And I hope those who were, I think, I appreciate that you call all of us and all entities in one meeting so that we can learn from each other. So that's the best possible outcome of this. There's three issues I just wanted to comment, because others really should be the entities who respond. On the issue of honorableship, I think the DG may be in a better position to answer that, perhaps some of those questions. But my answer is in relation whether the separation of the department is a cause of this. I'll contend it is probably not. And actually, the separation should have made the work of the department much easier, because you have got fewer entities at that end to account for. Of course, there are new entities like BBI and CETA who are also coming with some of the challenges. But it's definitely not the cause, because as you know, the process of rationalization of these things, we've been trying to explain to the committee what was the reason and why are we undergoing this, because we don't just undertake transformation for the sake of doing it. You are correct in that all these were aimed at ensuring that our program of rolling out affordable broadband to our people is achieved, because we couldn't achieve with the scattered entities. The program of ensuring that we have got effective postal service and financial services to the poor masses is achieved, and that's the aim, that's what we really were. And the problem of ensuring that we have got a secured and effective e-government program as a mechanism to roll out improving the efficiency gains from the government. Those are the key problems we're really following. And I think the government was correct to adopt that approach. On the issue of whether the ongoing disciplinary measures are causing disruptions, yes, it was of concern to us. When we were informed of these things, we did put a rider that yes, disciplinary measures may continue because they are not initiated by us, but they must not disrupt the activities and the programs of the. That was our rider, because we don't conduct disciplinary hearings as a ministry, but as a executive authority, that's what we put as a rider, that at most we shouldn't disrupt, because we're also looking at the issues, and one of the issues we put quite clearly, whether those people could be suspended once they have at the time, we rejected that, because we said the allegations were not new. So there was, in our view, not anything that they're going to be caused and cause the state to lose more things if they continue to work, because we're quite cognizant of the amount of work which needs to be done, particularly in the level of at which this disciplinary hearing you're taking at it, because it's at a higher level. We did also advise the department to ensure that they've got adequate capacity to carry this, so it can be carried out at the swiftest, what we call minimum disruptions. So those were the guidelines we just gave process of disciplinary hearing. You must also understand that if you listen to the audit committee, we've met them formally last year. We've not met them this year. We meet the auditor general, and they raise issues of consequent management. So, it is in that light that we say, yes, there should be some consequent management if something is done wrong. But, as you may know, when allegations are put for a disciplinary process, it doesn't mean you're guilty. It's just an allegation, it's a process which should be put so that you can either clear yourself or you can be cleared, or if you're not cleared, some remedial action must be taken. That's how we understand the disciplinary process. There's no presumption of guilty before you start the process. So I thought I should just give that from our side, but the department can answer themselves on the rest of the issues, because the second issue I wanted to also just briefly comment, because I know it's also with now on our table, is the issue of the appointment of the CEO of the Mr. Eskills Institute, the Gambla. Yes, I do have the files. As you know, the CEO left in 2012. Then we had the DDG, one of the DDGs to act there. And he did notify us last year that he was not coming back, I think January this year. And my understanding, the process of trying to appoint started then, after the resignation, the whole of 2013-2014. Because these are senior appointments. They have to follow the processes, the board, and so on, and then make recommendations, then we're still also take it to cabinet processes and all those things. But that's not what has been the delay part of it, Chairperson. Without going into details, my understanding is that the board made a recommendation previously. That recommendation was they identified who was the best candidate then. It was changed because the same candidate now was working one of the entities which were reporting to the department. Then they have to come now to the second candidate and so on. And then there was now at some stage a change to a third best candidate. And when we arrived and started confronting these things late last year, then we're looking in the context of what is expected of this entities to do. And more so because they are saying this is an organization in transition. Statutory, you still got NEMESA, but we all know we are forming IGAMVA eSkills Institute. So the profile of the person who's supposed to lead this thing must be able to have the qualities we need to drive e-skills, not just only the broadcasting, but massification of skills to the whole nation. So that's why if you see they put a target, they train 10,000, they train 10,000 people, they train 1,000. So because they are trying to merge these programs, which were totally separate programs before. So that's what basically we're trying to resolve. And our stance is that it's better to have a best candidate than a second best or the third best candidate, particularly when you're dealing with such massive transformation, because you don't want to, once you've appointed a person, it's very difficult to fire these people in the public service. If they don't perform, you have to wait for another 3 years assessing their performance and so on. So I'm not saying those second best according to the board selection are bad people. I don't know them. I've never met them, but we are dealing with papers which are in front of us. It also touches on the issue Shay has raised about the board and what to expect out of the board. Last year when we were interacting with the board, we did tell them that there was a presidential review commission on state-owned companies. And it was a very useful report. It was very extensive. I think 99.9% of the recommendations were accepted by government. Because it gives what is the challenge with our state-owned entities and what type of how do we separate these functions, as you say, as you say, what's the role and what type of people must lead these things administratively, and what will be the role of the boards? And more important from our side, what is the role of these entities? I think now that's from the shareholder side, but we ourselves must define much clearer what should be the role, and so these entities have got more focused roles instead of being all for work. So clearly the boards, they do know that there's no board which needs to meet every day, because we don't have such money and it won't serve any purpose. The Assembly has put chair, it was one of the main considerations for us to take action, because if a board finished the budget for the whole year in the first quarter of their financial year, it means there's definitely something wrong. They are not supervising the management to do its work. They are not keeping an eye. I don't know when the committees do have a chance to meet, because some of the committees, they are statutory committees, they must meet, and so on. So those are the things which we are part, but we are led by the Department of Public Enterprises, who is leading this process really of refining the Presidential Review Commission so to start the implementation. But we have encouraged all our boards to really look into that, so that we avoid where we have to put in a regulation, you must not meet more than 4 times a year as a board unless there's a special. They know that. They must meet at least a quarter. Unless there are urgent issues. They can't just be urgent issues all every day. If there are urgent issues, either you took wrong decisions or you are not taking appropriate decisions. So that's what I'll say at this stage on some of the issues which on the issues which are on our plate. But I've then required share that the specific questions must be answered by the specific people. I thought I should just start with those. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Minister. TM, you want to comment?
Thank you very much. I will be brief. I think thank you, Chair, to a large extent I've been covered by the Minister. But I wanted to just say, Chairperson, when the two departments were separated, I remember there was a discussion at this level where we had a joint parliament committee meetings between the Department of Communications and us. It's really interesting that it keeps on coming back. It's something which I think we might have to revisit, where we look at benefits, looking at countries where the two departments has been separated and there were good outcomes from performance point of view and general development of the ICT sector. Because otherwise, if we see it from a negative point of view, we might miss out, Honorable Singh, from the potential benefits that come with it in other countries. Yeah. Yes. So what I'm saying, we have to take it in a positive light, reflect, learn from other countries and see how we could also enjoy those benefits. Chairperson, with regard to your deep concerns about performance, when the minister made the opening remarks, I think he shared more or less the same concerns. I think there are some developments. They might not be visible. When we came on board, I remember there was a discussion about improvement from an oversight point of view in terms of how do we capacitate the department and so on. And those are critical interventions when you look at where we come from, the department comes from, where the oversight division was not as capacitated as we are trying to do today. It might be a small intervention, but from what the chair said, that let's bring solutions to the fore. Those are some of the things which I think in the long run might help us to really begin to make to see the desired outcomes. The issue which is clear that we have to look at again is this thing of compliance beyond the functions of audit, and maybe it's the kind of capacity that we have to look at in the same way as we have done with oversight, where the committee feels that what is in the annual performance is not aligned with the reports that we bring. I'm sure that we have risk management divisions, but even in the private sector, they will have high-level skilled people who will oversee that. And because there might be a disjunction, not because they are bad intentions or people are being dishonest, it might just be a question of capacity to really ensure that there's alignment and all the stated objectives talk to outcomes and so on. So I just wanted to clarify those two. With regard to the question of the skills revolution, I think the minister has taken the issue, which was specific to why was a person not employed. But I can also add that looking at this new ICT revolution and the revolution within the whole sector of government in terms of post-school policy, education, maybe the department in a way acted wisely to be cautious because there are all sorts of demands that are below university level, not also in the University of Technology, just targeting a huge component of young people, not at a degree level, the majority of them. So hopefully by the time a person is identified, there will be absolute clarity of the competences of those the NEET group, neither in education nor in training as well, so that they are not completely lost in the system. Because at least with people in engineering, computer science, the universities are doing something, but the skills that we require for the future in line with the NTP might seek different combinations and so on. So I'm sorry to take long, Chairperson, but I just thought I should emphasize those few points. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Teacher? Thank you very much. Let me just deal with the allocation of NELISA. One of the things that Minister raised when we were engaging him on the challenges of the allocation of NELISA is that the weaknesses that he observed was that the fact that we didn't have a business case, that's a
or it was contributing to the fact that we are not able to negotiate properly with National Treasury in terms of the allocation, because while we envisage this big mandate of the entity, but the reality is that we are working with a budget allocation of the MISA. I think more or less it's about 32, 38 million, I think about 34 million, something about 34 million. This is including rental of the property that they have in Johannesburg and the salaries and all of that. So bottom line, what then is left for the project is very, very minimal. Hence why the interim measure in terms of us assisting them, especially on the e-skills program. But for us to achieve what we want to achieve, both what the Deputy Minister is talking about and ICT revolution, we're definitely going to need a massive budget allocation for the new entity. But in terms of progress, we are in the process. What we needed was to get concurrence from the Minister of Public Service Administration and also the Minister of Finance with regard to the business case, which we do. So the process is underway with regard to the legal establishment of the entity. And I think post that, it will then assist us to say, now we've got this new entity and here's the mandate and all of that. How then do we then negotiate our lobby for a more higher allocation? The next issue that I
want to move to, the issue here was that the last time the committee received a report that transfers the money was done in the last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what is the status currently? Was the money transferred within the first quarter or was it transferred in the last quarter?
Chairperson, if I can, I think the money was transferred in the third quarter. In the third quarter, and the reason why there was a delay, there were issues about it was about us satisfying ourselves with some of the targets, and when the matter was then to send back to the board chair, she advised that the board needed to engage on some of the issues and they'll revert back to us correctly. Some questions, Mayra?
Unacceptable, despite the reasons. It can't be that an entity is expected for 2 months, for two quarters, there was nothing. And this is what I'm reflecting, Minister. We raised the issue in the PRRR report. I think we'll take it up.
Chairperson, on the issue, one honourable Sotezi was talking. She also spoke about CFO, but I don't know. I think she mixed it with CETA. I know that CETA does have a CFO, so my understanding would be that honourable Sotezi was probably talking about the CFO of the department, because I know that CETA they do have a CFO who's currently with us today. Honourable Chair, can I just request Chief Director HRM to deal with the vacancy, the process in terms of where we are with regard to the appointment of the CFO, how many people have resigned, the reasons for the resignation, the process of the...
Can I get you to do that, just the accounting office, not the HR?
Now, with regard
to... There's issues that have been raised by Honorable Shin that needs you, as the accounting officer, to report.
Now, with regard to the vacancy, Honorable Chairperson, the 99%, we're talking about funded positions, not necessarily funded. What we do have on the structure is positions that are also not funded, so that's the technicality. But what we had advised, or what we had started with the human resource unit, was the process that they call cleaning of a person. Now, on the CFO, we had gone through a process of the CFO. I think we were ready to appoint early this year with the minister. The person that we finally had concluded on appointment, when I engaged the person, at the time when we were interviewing him, was an acting CFO of one of the entities that is reporting to one of the government departments. But early this year, when we're following up with him in terms of that we are now finalizing the process of our appointment, he then advised me that he has already been confirmed at the entity that is working as a CFO. So one stopgap measure that we are trying to put on the table is a short-term contract. We've been engaging the Office of the Accountant General to assist us with an acting CFO while we then go through properly the process, because I think we've learned that the process of appointing a CFO, it actually is more
longer than you realize. And I think Broadband Infrastructure is one of the entities that seems to be also having some of the challenges that we are having as a department. Now, with regard to the disciplinary process, without getting into some of the issues, you will recall, Honorable Sheen, when former Minister Karim was here, he did talk about the issue of the SIU, and there was also the ethics. If you recall, there was a time when the committee were asking us what are we doing with the ethics report. I'm not sure whether it was you personally or one of the members, but I recall some of the members raised. So these are some of the issues that we're dealing with in terms of the matter, without getting into the details, because some of the matters are underway. Now, with regard to DDG International, his process was underway. It has been concluded. We did go through a process. I also don't want to get into some of the details, but we did follow a process as a department in terms of his disciplinary process that was concluded. And he was properly advised. The performance agreement, Honorable Chairperson, I know that this matter was raised when
Is that meaning that's why you have an acting DDG? You've just announced an acting DDG.
But the acting DDG has only been appointed for a few days. I think her acting is only ending tomorrow. We then need to go through a proper process with the minister.
That DDG has been dismissed.
Yes, that's correct. Now, with regard to, I think I've dealt with the CFO. Minister dealt with the appointment of the CEO of NEMISA, which we the process is underway. But I think maybe just to emphasize on what the minister is saying, one of the things that we also try to do from an oversight point of view with the minister is also to interact with the document hard copy, just to also satisfy ourselves that when the matter is then finalized with the minister, at least we are able to defend the appointment. Honorable Chairperson, with regard to the gaps of the department and the entities, I think we'll have to go back and go through that. I know that now, just before we were called, we were also finalizing the analysis of the entities' third quarter performance report, because they also submitted to us, which were forwarded to the minister. There were also areas in terms of areas of concerns that we also picked up per each entity. But also maybe to reflect, I know that it was not raised, the Dotsbetner issue. When the CEO of Dotsbetner presented, he spoke about the fact that they don't necessarily need to comply with the PFMA, which is a matter that we are also dealing with. I think how we have interacted with the matter had to do with them submissions of the AP Pro strategic plan, where they were of the view that they don't need to comply with the APP, no, the PFMA, therefore they don't need to submit the FAC 10 and APP. And I think the situation is caused by the fact that all along we've been giving them about 1.5 million. So Zedna is at a point where it's financially sustainable, hence why the discussion that because now you are no longer giving us the money, hence. I've requested legal to look at the matter legally because my view, and we still need to finalize it properly with Zedna and the minister, my view is that Zedna is collecting money because of them managing the domain space of the South African government. Therefore, it means that there has to be an oversight. The fact that they're not financially sustainable, but the revenue stream that they're collecting is a resource that belongs to the South African government. It's something that we are looking at so that there can be finality in terms of how do we deal with this issue. But I think it's also compounded by Honorable Chairperson, by the fact that their revenue stream is not, let's say if you were to compare it with ICASA in terms of what ICASA collects on license revenue, obviously it's not at the same scale. But the fact that the amount is low does not take away the fact that it's been collected on behalf of the South African population, because it's a domain space that belongs to the South African government. On the coordination, Honorable Chairperson, I do know it will take the matter forward in terms of how we deal with it. Honorable Chairperson, I think maybe what I could also request is the chair of the audit committee to also come up, because I know that we, especially on the third quarter performance report, we did interact intensely with the audit committee on the third quarter performance report, so that he, at least from himself and the head of internal audit, they can then deal with the matter. I think that covers for now, and let's see if I pick up anything else.
Mr. Okay. The questions are not answered.
Yes.
Okay. Honorable Shin and then okay. Honorable Sotism.
My question was about resignations in the department, how many so far, and if there is, was there any engagement to not discourage them from leaving the department, and not as common among those who resigned, if we do have people who resigned?
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, my understanding of the SIU and Ethics Committee reports is that the Directors General that are named in both of those reports are sitting in this room. Are you all being subjected to a disciplinary hearing? Also, I think DDG Vitakazi, I'm unsure of what issue he was involved in. It's not Media Corner and it's not the Ethics Committee. What were the circumstances, if you can, of his dismissal? And do you as DG have the power to dismiss a Director General? Is that not the Minister's job? Thank you.
Did you keep before we move to the other end?
On the resignation, I just don't recall how many. I know that we have a director that has resigned in International Africa. We have a director that has also resigned SCM, and also two deputy directors have also resigned. I think it's about, I can't recall, but I think it's about two directors if I recall. Then there was a two deputy directors, if I remember. Then Dr. Veso's retirement. Then there was also a director that was dismissed, Director Communications. But I stand to be corrected, but these are the figures that I can recall of God. Now, Honorable Shin, maybe if I can refer you to the Public Service Act, which does deal with the disciplinary process, which is a matter of the accounting officer of all the levels. The PSA is quite clear in terms of the accounting and the role of the accounting officer in terms of dealing with discipline, including those of the DDGs, including termination, should the ruling otherwise say so. Come again?
Allow her to finish responding. She's still responding. She's not done. No, she's not done. Allow her to finish.
Honorable Chairperson, I'm not sure if I understand the next question. What is the other question about who's facing what?
DG, let's not do dialogue. I'm chairing the meeting. The question was that are you facing DC because you were named in the SIU report? That's what she's asked.
And the other two
DGs.
Honorable Chairperson, I'm not facing any DC. I'm not sure if I was named in the SIU report. Of course, remember the SIU report is a report that goes to the President. I will not have sight of the full report. On other DDGs, Honorable Chairperson, if I can be, if it's possible not to get into some of the details of those processes.
Question, you don't have to go into the details. Are the DDGs that are sitting here also being charged? That's the question that she's asking. Are they going through a disciplinary hearing? The question was to you. You have responded. Are the other ones going through disciplinary hearing? Yes or no?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I think the questions to the DG is complete. Let's move on to Dr. Wuma. There was questions to you.
You may not be wrong, Chair. I don't often use all my titles. I have too many titles. One of my titles is Advocate Wuma, but I hardly use it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. Honorable Member Mafulo asked me a question regarding, am I happy, to quote you verbatim, am I happy with the performance of the department? Honorable Member, I'm not happy. And when I discovered that the department is not performing the committee decided to do a bit of an in-depth analysis of the performance of the department for the last 4 years. And the analysis I've shared with you earlier reflected indeed that the performance of the department is declining. Further to that, we also asked internal audit to assist us to do a further analysis to ascertain exactly where the problems are. They then did an analysis of each and every branch within the department quarter by quarter. And then we realized that, okay, the problem is in this and that branch. Then we said, what are the root causes for this poor performance? And then we found the root causes. And then we engaged in a meeting again with management. This was the second meeting. To say to management, we have the following concerns about your performance. Our analysis indicates the following. The performance is declining over the past 4 years. There are certain branches that are not performing. Year in, year out, every other quarter. And then we examined the root causes, and we found that there are 4 root causes for this poor performance, as I said earlier. The first is non-adherence to the performance information policy and the standard operating procedures. Because there are clear timelines and there are clear requirements of how you should handle your performance. And that was not happening in terms of the policy. But also we discovered some gaps in the policy and the standard operating procedures themselves in terms of holding branches accountable and responsible for their performance in line with the policy and the standard operating procedures. Then further on, we discover that there is no proper monitoring system on a monthly basis to ensure that departments report monthly performance. You can't wait until the end of the quarter. On a monthly basis, you have to have a system of monitoring performance. And then the third one, which we agree, of course, it's not a very popular subject, and the minister indicated to it, as well as the auditor general, is the issue of what happens when we don't perform. You know, should we just turn a blind eye and say you have not performed, that's the end of the story? And we said, no. We would like to see something happen here. Firstly, we want to help management in terms of their responsibilities by asking the relevant unit to review the policy and the standard operating procedure so that they can emphasize certain responsibilities within the policy. That we agreed on a meeting just this week. And then we have asked the Director General to take this policy, at least by this Friday, to the rest of senior management so that they are familiar with the changes that we are proposing as an intervention to improve the current performance. And then we said we must ensure that this policy is implemented immediately, so that we can see the change in the performance of the department. But then we realized that it's not just about the policy and the system, it's a people's issue as well. You know, how we relate, how we do our job, and we ask that an organizational culture change program be implemented to leadership cohesion, team cohesion, you know, all those issues that we'll call, without a better name, soft issues. Because the soft issues must underlie the change in the behavior, in the culture of performance. And then the Director General also agreed that must be implemented immediately, with immediate effect. Because every time I try and raise issues of performance, management tells me, no, but Chair, we're not functioning properly here. We're not cohesive. We're not working as a team. There's certain issues that we also need to address. And then we decided that it's not just people not performing. We need to look at other issues that can motivate people to perform better. And we agreed on all of these interventions that they must happen. And the chair indirectly asked the question that where was the audit committee when the performance of the department was declining? The simple answer is, Chair, we worked very hard in our meeting. We're not very popular. We ask deep questions and we give clear direction. But our role is to advise and give counsel. We can implement. When management does not take our counsel and advice into account, there's very little that we can do. We can come back to you and report exactly and give you minutes and the decisions that we've taken, that we've taken this decision, we've minuted this, this is what we have done. And we're very fortunate because the AG sits in all of our meetings. And I think that's the best. I mean, we had a meeting with the minister and we raised the same issues with the minister. And that's how best we can do. The framework that says if your counsel, your advice is not taken into account, then you can escalate to the minister, and that's the last resort for us. But to come back to you, the many areas where performance is not very good in this current financial year, in terms of our own analysis, is ISET. ISET has not performed. It's very clear. I mean, everybody knows that. And then the other one that has consistently not performed for the three quarters is infrastructure. And then the third one, to a very limited extent, is Chief Directorate SMME within SOC. Now, the three of them combined have pulled the department down in terms of overall performance. But there are challenges, and we have to analyze those challenges, why those specific branches have not performed. Some of the challenges relate to the change in mandate, which is very acceptable, and others relate to lack of capacity in terms of the people in those areas. But all I can say is we're doing our best to assist where we can, but we will not take responsibility for implementation. The best we'll do is we can provide evidence of our work and how best we've provided the necessary advice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not so sure if there's anyone who still has to respond. Okay. Okay. So that it will come after the rest of.
So it was just the issue of the loan and the reference of the Postbank and where was RISC and the audit committee. We have in RISC a strategic risk check, which is number two, is ineffective SOC oversight. And under that risk, we have highlighted that despite the controls that we're putting in place, the residual risk rating remains 16.25. And we have also consulted in depth with Minister, and we have raised concerns about SOC oversight and related aspects. Thank you, Chair.
The issue of disclosure of that loan will be taken care of. Because it has to be.
Yes, it should, by law, it's a disclosure requirement.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Benny?
Thank you, sir. Well, there was a question, I think, by the Honorable Tsotetsi, asking for a breakdown of the Zetna domain name skills program. In terms of race and gender, we, for this year, starting in January, we had 12 students, all of whom are African, 8 males and 4 females. The geographic presence of the project right now is primarily Gauteng. We are looking at a budget and means of expanding it annually to other provinces. It's unlikely that that will start this year, but we think next year that we will be able at least to partially achieve that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the question was around USASA not reporting on the rapid deployment project of access centers. The access centers, Chair, we have not abandoned them. In this particular financial year, there's about 94 of them that we have resuscitated that were done prior to 2010, and they are still very much active and are still very much being supported. So we have not abandoned them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to agree with you in terms of independence from the audit committee. And I just wanted to take you to the paragraph which you were reading in terms of where you mentioned that we explained that we were happy with the finances of BBI while there were issues that have been raised by the AG. I wanted to page 61, where you were reading, to read that paragraph in totality. Because if you read that further, we say the Audit and Risk Committee is satisfied with the general expertise, resources and experience in the company's finances division. We believe that the additional appointment of an executive in the treasury function will greatly enhance the gaps identified previously with regard to funding and management and cash management. The finance division, including the supply chain division structure, is going to be reviewed in the ensuing financial year to ensure that the competencies are matched with the company's operating requirements. By saying that, we're saying that there still needs something to be done. The general competency we are happy with, but then things still need to be done. We are not covering up anything, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Maybe just a whole. Because when you say you are happy with the performance, general means that when you say other things that you reflect are minor, that's my understanding of reading the audit. These are minor things, and I'm arguing that those are not minor issues. That the major content, there's no other issue that the Auditor General raises opinion on, except the issues in finance. So therefore, they can be minor when they are reflected upon. That's what I'm saying. Maybe we read English differently. But the understanding of the statement, unless if the colleagues who wrote it meant something else, but when you read it in terms of the accounting processes and Auditor General statements, because once it's minor, you can't say generally you are happy and then these are minor. Because if they are minor, for example, I'll make an example of the audit on Centec. Centec's audit says that everything is going well, but there's a minor thing of the court that is not even in the hands of Centec, the Botswana case. That's a minor issue, but it's outside the control of Centec. And even when it's reflected upon by the Auditor General, it's there. But you notice that it's remaining as a threat, as a risk, but it's not within. That's what we talk about minor things on audit and how we assess performance. And hence, when we assess the report, we look at that when we say that things are well, we expect things to be well. Just, I don't see, Chair, there's an issue for you.
Yes, Chair, there was a few questions. First one is about the collections. What we had not been doing, which we've been incorporated now, is that the treasury regulations actually specify that all entities have got to pay their obligations within 30 days. And in our collection approach, we were not bringing this to the attention of accounting officers. So we've now instituted that and instituted a process where the very first time the debtor becomes overdue, we notify them, bring to their attention the PFMA implications of not paying, and also engage with them. We've also beefed up the team that is doing the collections on our behalf. The financial implications of planning, obviously, other than the fact that you haven't spent the money, it also has got implications in terms of not having the ability to grow the business and aggregate more of government business. If we're not spending money on CAPEX, then it means that we're not going to be able to accommodate more and more of government data that needs to be catered for, neither address the risk issues that government entities may have, and therefore there are financial implications as a result of that. The last question, I
do think that it arose as a result of the input that the chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee had given in his presentation when he talked about the interview for the CFO as well as the Chief Audit Executive. Hence the question by Honorable Sotisi, maybe the DG missed that point. The interviews will be taking place next week. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think, members, it's very clear that this discussion needed more time. There are a lot of issues, and how we structure it going forward is going to be important so that we are able to get into the details. I mean, I'm sitting here, there are quite a number of things that I still feel that should have been responded to, especially on the department. Even the issue of the BEE thing that is sitting here, because I know the issue of the sector has been really asking if there's a direction, how are we going to have to, how, what are we expected come the 1st of financial year, I think 1st of April, that they're expected to comply. And I see the target is not met, the implication thereof, of those. So I'm just thinking there are a number of things that one would wanted to have gone back to. And because we have a sitting, it's already, I think, members, apologies, you are not going to be able to have your lunch. With this few minutes left, the bell will be ringing in the next 10 minutes. Just to apologize for that training, but I think it was necessary for us to get into this detail. And we'll definitely have a follow-up in terms of the discussions. We select a number of issues. There are issues that I think that we needed to drill into. We are not able to. But for me, where I'm sitting, colleagues, is that we need to understand and get into the detail of doing our work. We expect we wouldn't find ourselves in difficult positions if all of us just do what we are expected to do. I've left the matters of the thesis and all that out. I think when the time comes, when it's right, the minister will engage as a committee with you, but we want to allow you space to deal with it, so that when we come at the time and we are expected to deal with, we are able to deal with it appropriately, and not in a forum like this. That's why I didn't want to go into detail, just wanted to clarify those issues just on the basis of what is happening. But I'm just saying to even the colleagues who or the chairpersons of the audit committee and risk, lessening your limitation that you can only advise. But our responsibility, both all of us, is to make sure that things are done in the right way. Because when you write your reports, these are the things that you must say. If you keep on raising something and people are not listening, you must write it. Because if it doesn't reflect, who will find you as you have neglected your responsibility? Because it's out of those things that we pick up some of the issues that need to be done. So there are a number of things that we need to correct, there are a number of things that we reflect, others we might not have dealt with, and we might not have specifically said to you as an entity, this is why. But sitting around, and I think, Minister, sitting around here, all of us will be able to see the gaps, where the issues are. And we are going to call you again later. We'll communicate our program. When we deal with our recommendations as the committee, because we don't want to be speaking and sounding like old records, we are going to ask you to respond to the issues that we raise. So I hope, colleagues, you have PLOs in every department to take the issues that we are raising in every committee and start dealing with them. Because once we start asking for those responses, we don't want to receive excuses that, no, we are still in the process. I think the time of processes must come to an end. We must resolve issues. With those few words, colleagues, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Wait, are you going to finish? Okay.
I don't know what to say.